Okay.
Chevra, we started speaking last time about the mitzvot that seem outdated or that seem immoral. And this is a question that every thinking Jew has asked themselves. And you look at the Torah, and there are a lot of questions that come up about how does the Torah allow servants, issues of women's rights, aguna, the brachav shelo asani isha, she asani kirtzono. And what we're also going to talk today about is eradicating Amalek, right? That definitely does not jive with Torah morality, killing every man, woman, and child. Maybe 3,000 years ago that was accepted, apparently, but today it doesn't go over. So how can the Torah command us with this eternal... The Torah's eternal. Conquering the land of Israel. You know, today the United Nations, everyone's pointing the finger at us and saying, you Jews, you took away the land from the Palestinians. On the other hand, the Torah commanded us to conquer the land of Israel. So how does the Torah morality, we were the ones who brought the morality to the world, could it be that mankind has advanced more than the Torah morality? Right? Abraham Lincoln, 150 years ago, he freed the slaves. Why? God didn't think of saying, thou shalt not have slaves? Right? These are good questions. Last time, what we spoke about last time, in terms of the answers, answer number one is that God obviously thought of this problem, and that is the role of the Torah Sheba'al-Peh. Torah Sheba'al-Peh, the Sanhedrin, that's exactly the role, where the Sanhedrin, we saw the Rambam inside, is always updating the Torah to see whether it is going to bring people closer to Torah or push them away. And for example, Rav Kook talks about, will there be animal sacrifices in the third Beit HaMikdash? And he writes, well, the Sanhedrin will have to decide whether animal sacrifices is going to bring people closer to Torah or push them away. And in all honesty, I think as it is today, it's going to push people away. And therefore, the Sanhedrin has this safety mechanism to make any of the changes that they need temporarily. But that temporarily could be renewed every 50 years, every 50 years, every 50 years. Then we spoke about how the Torah is eternal. And eternity, we always think of, hey, the Torah is still relevant today, even though it was given 3,300 years ago. That's pretty good. But you have to remember, eternity also works the other way. The Torah had to be relevant 3,300 years ago in a world where there was no surrogate mothers, where there's no artificial insemination. The Torah had to allow taking a second wife to have children. And in a world where there's no cotton gin, and the Torah had to allow servants. And this is really two points. Point number two is that the eternal Torah had to be relevant also 3,300 years ago. How did the Torah do that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a very interesting chat. The Torah differentiates between things that are allowed and things that are obligatory. The Torah does not obligate anything which is immoral. But the Torah allows certain things when mankind has yet to mature, right? The evolution of mankind. It allows us to take slaves when it's needed. It allows us to take a second wife when it's needed. And this is point number three, that we have to differentiate between allowing and obligating. Yeah, Terry.
Can I like go stop with like carbon out like animal? Let's say like stop animals, sacrifice, like, or no, like,
adultery,
like, Judaism.
Yeah.
But, like, let's say,
Torah is always going to be super moral. The Sanhedrin, if you think, who is the Sanhedrin we spoke with last time? Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Kook, they're not reformed. They're not going to allow homosexuality or to allow cheating on your spouse or things like that. Of course they're not going to allow that. Do not worry. The Sanhedrin, that's exactly... You have to remember, the Sanhedrin are the most genius Jews. Who is the Sanhedrin? Girls, today, Albert Einstein decided he went into physics rather than being a Talmid Chacham. Sigmund Freud started psychology rather than being a Talmid Chacham. All of those Jewish Nobel Prize winners who today are directing their activities and their talents in a million and one different directions, those are the people who were and who will be on the Sanhedrin. And we spoke about how last time, and this is an important point, we saw in source number one that the third stage of Ge'ulah, which is really the next stage, after flourishing in the land of Israel, Barech Aleinu, and after we're Kibbutz Galiot, Tikav Shofar Gadol, what's the next Baruch Ha'an Shmona Asrei? Hashiva Shoftenu Kevarishona. And just like Hashem fulfilled the first two stages, we have no reason to believe that He's not going to fulfill the third stage. Yeah?
What did you mean when you say Sanhedrin and Torah about that? You mean like they will keep adding so that it can seem moral?
They can add, they can detract, they can freeze, they can do really anything that they want. If they see a bracha, if they decide that Kitniot on Pesach is making it difficult for us to eat in each other's homes, they can decide everyone eats Kitniot.
But I'm saying, like, how does that relate to, like,
a
mulligan slavery?
Slavery, we already discussed, that slavery was allowed from when it was necessary. But if you read in between the lines of the Torah, you'll see very clearly that the Torah doesn't like it. And this really brings us to a new point that we didn't discuss last time. Chevra, we all believe that everything starts with God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the beginning of everything. But just in order to help us identify and understand how the world runs, Sarah, you got to take good notes. There are other girls who aren't here. We depend on you. God, as if it were, wears three hats. There is the God who is the creator of the world. There is the God who gave the Torah. He is the Torah giver. And the third hat of God is that He is the God of history. He runs the world, what's called Hashgacha. Now, girls, all three are talking about the same God, but notice, have a look at the board, they're also all leading back to God, and most particularly, the godly ideals. Now, God wants us to get to the godly ideals. He wants us to identify with the ideals of morality in the Torah. And He does it through three ways. Chevra, when God created the world, He created us with a conscience. Right? That conscience is a godly thing. And that's what Rav Kook writes about in source number 5. Asur liyirat shamayim shetidachek et hamusara tivi shel ha'adam. It's unthinkable that the Torah's Musar could contradict secular Musar. Because secular morality comes from the same address as religious morality. Do you all see that? Where does secular morality come from? It comes from the conscience. Who created the conscience? The same God who gave us the Torah. In other words, God gave us a conscience to want us to be more moral. He also gave us a Torah that little by little gets us to be more moral. For example, Chevra, the laws of slaves. The fact that in a world that slaves were treated like animals, the Torah comes and says, you know what? If you have one pillow, you have to give it to the slave. If you have one last piece of cake, you have to give it to the slave. The Talmud Yerushalmi says that whoever buys a slave has bought a master to himself. Girls, 3,300 years ago, the Torah started educating us to look at slaves like people. Comes the God of history and reveals to man about 150 years ago the cotton gin. Remember Eli Whitney and the cotton gin? All the years, the northern states told the southern states, hey, you're really primitive. Why don't you grow up and become more moral? Free your slaves. What did the southerners say? You're big talkers, right? Because the northerners are businessmen. You don't grow cotton. You don't have farms. You can't have farms without slaves. Comes the God of history, and he reveals the cotton gin. And then Abraham Lincoln could say, okay, now you have to free your slaves. Now, why did man want to free the slaves? Two reasons. Chevra, focus. There is a basic conscience that God created us with 6,000 years ago. And also, after the Torah of 3,300 years is telling us, be good to your slaves. Slaves are people. You have to pay for their orthodontist work. You have to pay for their kids. You have to give them a wife. You have to... Chevra, 3,300 years of Torah morality is what brought mankind to the level where we're at today. It's davka because of the Torah morality that man became moral. The same thing Rav Kook writes, for example, about vegetarianism. The Torah created us with a conscience that when you see blood, you know that there's something wrong with eating an animal, right? But if you have to, you have to. But the Torah says, you know what? Even as long as you have to, you have to sheft it in a way that's painless. You have to tzar balei chayim. You're not allowed to hurt an animal. You're not allowed to sheft an animal and her child on the same day. Right? All of these moral laws were basically giving us the message that when we do grow up, when we do mature, we should want to return to the spiritual level of Gan Eden, where Adam HaRishon was a vegetarian. So all this was theoretical, and we knew, yeah, someday we will return to be vegetarians, and then comes the God of history, the God of technology, who reveals to man soy substitutes, protein substitutes, leather substitutes. Emma, you see that? The world today, little by little, is realizing, hey, we can technically do without eating meat. We can technically do without wearing leather. And little by little, the God of history, who is the same God who gave us the Torah, who little by little is bringing us to the godly ideals, also through history, also through the conscience, also through the Torah, it all begins with the same God and is leading in the same direction. Chevra, this is a real eye-opener. And for those who caught this, this should have a lot of ramifications to the way you understand the world, how do you understand the Torah, and how you understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah?
Just to add, we were learning about Ishikai
yesterday.
Yeah?
Fantastic.
Women
were used to be treated like slaves. Women used to be treated like animals. The Torah of 3,300 years is bringing mankind up. And this is really point number four. Let's write it down. Point number four is that the Torah cannot contradict morality because it comes from the same source as secular morality of the God of history and the God who created the conscience. In other words, this is point number four, that the Torah morality, or I should say Torah and secular morality, come from the same source, from the same God. So obviously they are not going to contradict. And point number five, where are we going to write it? Here, point number five, is that Davka, because of 3,300 years of Torah morality, that's what brought mankind to the level of morality that we are at. Where did mankind come up with the idea of democracy? That women have rights? That blacks have rights? It all is a result of 3,300 years of Torah. And this is point number five. Davka, because of Torah morality, mankind advanced. It's worth mentioning in this context also the Rambam in Source 7, Ilchot Melachim, Perek Yud Aleph Halachah Dalid, talks about that it wasn't just the Jewish people who brought the Torah and who brought morality to mankind. The fact that the Christians adopted the Ten Commandments and adopted morality, this also helped spread Torah morality to the whole world. So this long historical process is not just the Jews. It is also the God of history who brought around Christianity and modern morality. Chevra, we are still left with two questions. Because until now, we have said that the Torah does not obligate anything which is immoral. Even if something looks moral, it is temporarily allowed, but it's not obligated. But what about Amalek? And what about conquering the land of Israel? Girls, there are two mitzvot which apparently seem immoral. Rav Kook deals with them as well. Let us look together in source number 8. In source number 8, Rav Kook writes, in Ma'amare Riyah, page 252, about conquering the land of Israel. And again, the Palestinian problem, and the United Nations, and the International Court in Hague says that they will want to judge the Israeli army officers as immoral, right? You all heard about that. Rav Kook, 100 years ago, wrote the answer. Aval mechevan she'anu goy tzadik. Am Yisrael is called the righteous nation. We're not just out to make individuals righteous. We want the nation of Israel to have a righteous army and righteous politics and righteous history. Shomer emunim, loyal to the morality of God. Hakibush shelanu hu b'makom she'efshar. Our conquering of the land of Israel, whenever possible, rak b'derech shel shalom. We want to do it only through peaceful ways. Al yedei kinyan kesef, through a buying the land of Israel. Girls, has anybody heard of the Jewish National Fund, JNF? Has anybody ever bought a tree in the land of Israel? Chevra, the original plan of the Jewish National Fund was to buy acre after acre after acre, dunam after dunam, to that the Jewish people should buy the land of Israel from the Arabs. We don't want to fight. As a matter of fact, the Arabs gain from this solution. Do you all see? It's actually better for them and better for us. Perry, just write down your comment and so you don't forget. Chevra, what ruined this idea? All right, it would have been so nice for us to have the state of Israel just through buying it, through peaceful. The Arabs will make a lot of money, and we will have our country, and then we can fulfill the mitzvah of God. The problem was that the Arabs ruined the plan. In the 1920s, they put out a death penalty on any Arab who sells land to Jews, which, by the way, still stands today. Has anybody heard of there are different organizations in Yerushalayim, in Hebron, who pay tens and millions of dollars to buy old shacks and old buildings from Arabs? Why do we pay tens of millions of dollars for a little rundown shack? Because the Arab who's selling it to us, he has to take his family, move to Canada, he has to learn a new language, he makes a lot of money from it. But why does it have to leave? Because if he stays here, the Arabs are going to kill him.
That's a good deal for him. Get out of here.
Chevra, whoever decides to do it, first of all, let's go back in time. In the 1920s, before the death penalty, the Arabs were benefiting a lot from selling the land. You heard of Baron Rothschild?
Yeah.
Rothschild and Montefiore. They were investing so much money in the Middle East, the Arabs were benefiting, we were benefiting. Then the Arabs come with this idea of, you can't sell land to Jews anymore. Now we have a problem. Who solved the problem? Hevra, the God of history, solved the problem. In 1948, when the United Nations decided there is going to be a partition plan, and that there is going to be a tiny state of Israel, it was shaped like a dagger, and all the rest of the land of Israel, the biblical land of Israel, was given to the Arabs. Now, we were happy with that, and the God of history solved our problem, at least giving us part of the land of Israel. But what happened? Hevra, seven Arab nations attacked us from the east, from the north, from the south, and swore they were going to push us into the sea. What happened?
We won,
and we extended our borders. In 1967, the same thing happened again. And again, the Arabs wanted to push us into the sea. But this time, within 6 days, Israel more than doubled the size of the land of Israel. Because in a war of defense, where they were going to drive us into the sea, we liberated the West Bank, we liberated the Golan Heights, we liberated the Sinai. We more than, within 6 days, girls, there has never been anything like that in human history. To double the country's size within 6 days, only God can do that. Girls, this is the God of history who solved the problems for us. Because, yeah, we're not going to go out and to conquer the land of Israel. Why? Because it's not considered moral. So how did the God of history fulfill his covenant? Already he swore that he would give the land of Israel to the Jews. Well, the God of history arranged it that the Arabs attacked us, and they lost a lot of territory. How are we going to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash on Har HaBayit? There's this big Arab mosque there. We're not going to blow it up. I don't know how the God of history is going to solve that problem, but this is a very interesting point, what Rav Kook is talking about, and this is point number 6. Didn't we write it down? No. That the God of history solves moral problems. Let's see another example of this, where Rav Kook deals with the question of why did Zionism have to start as a secular movement? Right? We're religious. We would prefer for all the Zionists to have been religious. And Rav Kook deals with this issue. Hevra, just think about it. If Zionism would have asked the rabbis, should we make Aliyah and bring the Mashiach? Or should we wait passively until Mashiach comes? There would have been a machloket, right? And there was a machloket. And the rabbis were arguing for Zionism, against Zionism. And you know what solved the issue? The secular Zionists, they didn't ask the rabbis. They just did it. Now, Rav Kook is not against rabbis, obviously. But he's telling us that one of the ways that God of history solves moral or modern issues is through history and through secular people. Let's see it inside, for example, Rav Kook, in this context, brings source number 9. A story in Masechet Sukkah. Daf Mem Gimel Amud Bet. Pam achat chal shvi shel arava liyot b'shabbat. I don't know if you know that in addition to taking the four species, every day in the Beit HaMikdash, they would take a huge arava and put it, lean it on the Mizbeach. This is halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. It's not written in the Torah. Now, girls, have you heard of the tzedukim or baitusim?
Yeah,
they did not accept the oral law. They didn't accept the Torah Shebaal Peh. So they didn't like this idea of putting the Arava on the Mizbeach because it's not written in the Torah. So they played a practical joke. Girls, sometimes it's hard for us to think that in the olden days they used to have sense of humor also. So the religious Jews, they brought these aravot before Shabbat, put them in the Beit HaMikdash, and tomorrow morning we'll put it up on the Mizbeach. The Baitusim saw these big willow branches lying in the Beit HaMikdash, and they thought of a practical trick. They put rocks on the Aravot. What's the halachic status of rocks on Shabbat? They're muktzah. You can't move them. Now, the Baitusim, you see what they did? They said, either way, we win. Because if the rabbis moved the rocks, they transgressed muktzah. And we don't like that isser of muktzah, so we won. And if they don't move the rocks, then nobody's going to put the arava on the mizbeach, and we won. Chevra, you all see this? Either way, the Baitusim win.
But they don't believe that rocks are muktzah?
No, but they did it for us, because they wanted to jab us. Chevra, what do you think happened? The rabbis obviously argued. One said, we can't do without arava, even if it's at the expense of muktzah. The other rabbi said, no, muktzah is more important. We can't move muktzah, even if it means not putting up the arava. And the rabbis were arguing. L'machar hikiru ben amea aretz, a bunch of ignorant kohanim looked and said, hey, why doesn't anybody put the arava on the mizbeach? Ushmatu mitachar avanim, they didn't know the laws of muktzah. They just moved the rocks, put the aravot on the mizbeach, and solved the problem. Girls, do you see what Rav Kook is saying? The fact that Zionism is a secular movement solves a lot of problems. Another example. Chevra, you know there are going to be elections now. And Naftali Bennett is one of the serious candidates to be prime minister. He's religious. Sorry? Oh yeah, in Ranana? So, Chevra, if Bezrat Hashem, not if, eventually there will be a religious prime minister in Israel. Now, a religious prime minister has an obligation to go out and to conquer the other side of the Jordan. That's part of biblical Israel. A religious prime minister has a problem. He has to build a Beit HaMikdash. That might start World War III. Do you all see the problem? Because it says in the Torah you have to build a Beit HaMikdash.
Without
Ruach HaKodesh and Nevuah? Yeah. There's a mitzvah today and yesterday to build a Beit HaMikdash. The problem is technical. It's going to start World War III with the Arabs. There's a mosque there. Chevra, the God of history has solved that problem that the prime ministers of Israel are not religious. Sarah, do you see how that solves the problem?
Yeah.
They don't ask.
They're going to build a Beit HaMikdash.
No, again.
They don't want them to.
Secular Jews aren't interested in the Beit HaMikdash. They don't ask rabbis, what should we do? And that solves the problems. In other words, the God of history sometimes solves moral and halachic problems by, you know, we don't have Navim today. A Navi could say, you know what? For the time being, we're not going to build a Beit HaMikdash. We don't even have a Sanhedrin today, like we spoke about last time. So if so, are we going to have to start World War III by building the third Beit HaMikdash? The answer is, the God of history already solved that problem because nobody's asking him. Nobody's asking the rabbis. Do you all see that? Very interesting approach. In other words, Chevra, let us look, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, Rav Kook's son, words this very ingeniously. Let's look together in source 12. Habidiyevid, imayit galut mamashuta, huchach v'nidbarer shemilechatchila hayta tova unechona. Or in English, the bidiyevid of man is the lechatchila of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sorry, you got to take that one down. The bidiyevid of man is the lechatchila of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Do you all see that? If man is in a situation of bidiyeved, yeah, I would like for the prime minister to be religious. I would like for the government of Israel to be religious. So that's bidiyeved. But it's the lechatchila of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the God of history, he is the one who decided that the world is not yet ready for a religious Jewish government.
Do you all? Obviously it's not ready.
Oh, so this is exactly, that's a good point. We have to find the balance, on the one hand, to educate people to want the Beit HaMikdash, to educate people to want to conquer the eastern bank of the Jordan, but in the meantime, we don't have a moral problem. Okay?
Like, it's saying, like, because our leaders are not religious, we don't have to deal with, like, should we go and make Beit HaMikdash?
Correct. Nobody's, it's not even on the agenda. We don't have a moral problem. In the meantime, for the foreseeable future, we don't have to deal with that moral problem of blowing up the mosque on Har HaBayit. Oh, so obviously, again, it's the same answer that I said before. We have to find the right balance, and just like we started coming back to the land of Israel, and we spoke last time about how we started, and we should talk about reviving the Sanhedrin. Also, have you people heard of Machon HaMikdash?
Yeah.
My daughter, my Dusherut Lumi, there next year, where they are already building the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash. Why? It's no... Chevra, mamash, mamash, no. We spoke last time about... Emma, if you want to know the order of the Geula, we mentioned last time that the Anshei Knesset HaGdola set up the Shmona Asrei from the ninth bracha on according to the order of Geula, right? Where it's first, Barech Aleinu, that the land of Israel flourishes, Tikav Shofar Gadol Cherutenu is Me'as Aliyah, Hashiva Shoftenu, reviving the Sanhedrin, afterwards comes V'li Yerushalayim Yircha, building the Beit HaMikdash, only afterwards comes at Tzemach David, Mashiach Ben David. The Beit HaMikdash is not dependent on Mashiach. Because there is a mosque in the way. And because it will start World War III. And because the Prime Minister of Israel is not religious. So he doesn't even ask the question.
Yeah. So the Prime Minister should be religious.
You know what? Let me just finish. We're running out of time. Write down your questions so that we don't forget. Chevra, there is one last issue which we have to do today. And that is about Amalek. What about Amalek? Chevra, we said that anything that doesn't sound moral or anything which is outdated is not obligatory. It's allowed. But Amalek is obligated. And here the Torah does obligate us to eradicate Amalek. Chevra, let us look together in Source 13, where Rav Kook also deals with this. Kishiyavo yom, when the day will come, ve'enoshiyut lo tinsa la kol tzorech b'shum mifal shel sina, when mankind will really rise in the ladder of morality, of maturity, and there will no longer be hate in the world, bituchim anu she'az zecher amalek kvar chala ve'ino. In other words, Chevra, halachically, the God of history has already solved the problem because there's no Amalek around today. Maybe 3,000 years ago, we needed to fight fire with fire. They were killing every man, woman, and child. We had to retaliate or at least deter them by threatening. You know what we did to Amalek, who tried to obliterate the Jewish people? But today, we're that. Does that sell, right? Everyone agrees that you can't come to the United Nations and start killing little babies. The God of history has solved the problem that there's no biological Amalek. But we're still left with the question. So if there's no biological Amalek, why does the Torah still obligate us every year on the Shabbat before Purim to remember Amalek? Why do we remember Amalek if God knew already when he gave the Torah, he knew there wasn't going to be Amalek forever. So why do we have to still remember it?
He knew
Chevra, let us look together in the Rambam, source 14. Hilchot Melachim Perakei Halachahe. The Rambam explains what is the mitzvah to eradicate Amalek and to remember. V'chein mitzvah taseh la'abed zecher Amalek. Sh'ne'emar timcheh zecher Amalek. Like we said, we don't have Amalek anymore, so that doesn't apply. But what does still apply, mitzvah taseh lizkor tamid ma'asav haraim va'arivato. We have to every year remember what they did to us. Kidei le'orer evato. Here's the punchline. In order to awaken hate. Shana, when do you have to awaken hate? When do you have to awaken hate? When we don't hate. Girls, the Jewish people, we're not violent. We're nice guys. You know what? Look at your staff. Who is the Israeli army? Look at your staff of rabbis here. How could we go and fight and kill and chase and stand? You know what the most difficult thing for me was? To stand at an army checkpoint. And sometimes you have to ask pregnant women to get out of the ambulance in order that a chayelet should frisk them. I remember during the Intifada, we had intelligence reports telling us, tipping us off, that the Arabs were smuggling in suicide bombs on pregnant women because they knew that we wouldn't check them. We wouldn't stop the ambulance. So it was basically the Arabs who forced us to start checking ambulances. You understand? Now, I don't want to stop ambulances. And I don't want to interrogate an Arab who might be totally innocent. So what I did, tell you a trick, I bought these reflective sunglasses. You ever hear of Clint Eastwood? You know, policemen wear these glasses that they see you, but you don't see their eyes. Because when you see a policeman's eyes, you could tell, you know, if he's nice. So in order to look tough, you want to cover up your eyes. So I bought these glasses, and when I had to, you know, pretend to be tough, I would put on these glasses. And say I see a suspicious Arab approaching. I say,
hey!
How's that? It's an act. But if he would see my eyes, he would know it's an act. Chevra, the state of Israel could not exist if we don't know that sometimes we have to get tough, even if it's artificially. You know what it's like? Chevra, can you just picture a nice 16, 17-year-old girl who is super naive and super sweet and super beautiful, and her father sits her down for a father-daughter talk and says, listen, you are super nice, but you're a little naive. You're super sweet. You have to know that there are some bad people out there. Don't let them take advantage of you. Did you see that? That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us. Once a year, we nice guys have to awaken hate. Why? So that if and when we ever need this, we have it at our disposal. Because otherwise, the Arabs are going to push us into the sea. And another Hitler will come around and finish off what the previous one didn't. And that is why we have to remember Amalek. This, Chevra, is the answer to the other two questions. To summarize, how does the Torah manage with questions, with mitzvot that seem to be outdated or immoral? We mentioned that's exactly the job of the oral law, the Sanhedrin, to constantly update Torah. We spoke about how the eternal Torah had to be relevant also 3,300 years ago. And that's why the Torah had to allow slavery and taking second wives, etc. We also spoke about how it's impossible that the Torah contradict modern morality, because modern morality is really coming from the same address as the Torah. It's from the same God. And it's leading to the same place. Okay? Point number five, was, how did mankind really mature to want morality and democracy? Because of 3,300 years of Torah morality that little by little helped us mature. And the final point, the God of history, even problems that don't have a solution and that sound immoral or outdated, the God of history solves the problem by Pashut making those mitzvot undoable in the modern world. We asked, what about conquering the land of Israel, which is an obligation? Well, we saw the obligation is to own the land. And to buy it is a more peaceful way of doing it. The Arabs gave out the death penalty and they screwed up the plan. Well, the God of history solved that one when the Arabs attacked us and we had no choice to defend. We asked about Amalek, that is an obligation. Again, the God of history did away with Amalek. So why do we remember Amalek? Like we said, because once a year, we nice guys have to remember to get tough.